Welcome to the Riverfront Bengals show. This is episode number 3. Still getting this thing up and running. I am Nate Dotson. He's Joe Farsing, and we're here to talk some football. Joe, how are you, sir?
I am doing great, brother. What about yourself?
Man, I can't complain a bit. It's a beautiful day here in the mountains. I'm healthy.
What are you talking about?
You know, listen, live where you want to live. This is the Zoom era.
We have hills.
Well, Joe, it has been a few days since the fateful week one that we would love to forget. How are you feeling now compared to when you and Chad recorded that post-game recap?
I feel a little more, let's say, solid in thinking that, like, it was a fluke game. Not that, you know, they're going to win every game, or not that, you know, they're not going to have letdown games, but what happened isn't something that's, you know, that's going to be a trend. Joe Burrow isn't going to throw the ball up 4 different times. He's not going to, TJ Watt isn't going to rip a interception at full speed from 2 feet away, you know, jump up and grab it. So I'm still feeling pretty good about the team. The defense is still, you know, still going to look really good. So,
yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think there's, you know, we're going to get into a lot of that. I think there are some really, really great things to take away. I think when you break it down, the reasons that the major reasons that it looks like the Bengals lost were things that are so easily correctable and things that you wouldn't expect unless the team was just playing together for the first time, really. So let's kind of get into it. But first, let's talk about some injury and news updates for the week. I think the one on everybody's mind is T. Higgins is in the concussion protocol. One of those glaring things that I mentioned that could have changed the game would have just been the presence of T. Higgins on the field. They really, really missed him being out there. What have you heard? What's his status as it relates to that concussion?
Zach said during his presser that he's hitting every check mark that he's supposed to be in and getting through concussion protocol, but it's a process. You still have to, you know, day by day. I mean, he did dress and worked out on the side today, so that's good. I would assume that he should be good to go for Sunday, but it's kind of just wait and see. You can't really put any percentage odds on it. So,
yeah, sure. And by Zach, of course, he means Bengals head coach Zach Taylor, not legendary Bayside High School student Zach Morris. Easy to confuse. I get it. But, I mean, I think having T. Higgins out there is so important to this team. It was obvious. The way he can be utilized in the red zone, his ability just to go up and get balls, I think they really, really missed him. So we're hoping for some good news there. Like you said, you know, you're going to take it day by day. He can pass today and fail tomorrow. And all we really care about is that he comes out on the other side healthy and then feeling good with no long-term repercussions. What else? Definitely. Obviously, we have one other big one. I think that, I think all Bengals podcast sphere has been talking about this. Clark Harris, long snapper, out for a while. He has a torn biceps. It could be out all season. Last I saw, they weren't sure. Have you heard anything different?
No, they haven't put him. They put him on IR with the designation possibly to return. They're not saying that he's going to be done for the year, but it's probably a season ender. He seems upbeat that he's not going to, you know, end his career on IR, so he wants to come back, whether it's the end this season or 2023. So,
yeah, hoping for the best there. It really just goes to show the average fan has no clue about how important the long snapper is. It's why they don't keep a backup on the active roster. They're not injured very often. You rarely need more than the one. But thankfully, the Bengals do have a pretty decent in-house option. What do you know about this fellow they signed off the practice squad who has one of the coolest names you're going to see?
Cal Itemitis, it sounds like some sort of stomach illness that you need to take some
stomach illness. Almost like Roman gladiator.
Luckily he's been with the team. They signed him as an undrafted free agent after the draft. He was one of the two position battles was long snapper. So he's worked with Huber, he's worked with McPherson all summer in the spring. So can't say it's gonna be a seamless transition, but at least, you know, he at least has a working relationship. It's not someone just coming in off the street that's never worked with these guys before. He was an All-American last year at Pitt. He won the Patrick Minnelli Award. I have no idea that there was a Patrick Minnelli Award, but it goes to
Minnelli.
Neighbor of yours?
bumped some sugar off of him just yesterday.
No, it goes to the NCAA award for the best long snapper in the country. So he was best collegiate long snapper coming up, whatever that's worth.
I mean, I think it's worth something. If you have the choice of having the best long snapper in the country or not having the best long snapper in the country.
Yeah, it's could be worse. Could be the worst long snapper in the country, and then you'd be Mitchell Wilcox. That's not fair.
That's not unfair. He did not deserve the slander.
No.
Cal Adamitis, God, I love that name. Also, you brought this to my attention. Used his NIL, NCAA name, image, and likeness money to raise money for the Children's Hospital of Pittsburgh. He can't be forgiven that it was Pittsburgh because it's still such an amazing cause. And he vowed to shave off his long hair if 94K was raised because he was number 94. And what do you say? They got $114,000. So seems like a stand-up guy that has his priorities straight. And, you know, as you said, he got plenty of reps in the training camp and stuff with, you know, the first team. And so I don't know. I don't expect to see what we saw transpire on Sunday going forward. What do you think?
Yeah, there's a little bit of an unknown just because Clark Harris was there for, 14 years, never had an unplayable snap his entire time there. He's in there, you know it's going to get back to the punter for the holder or the punt, whatever. That part of the execution is going to be fine. Now, you're getting someone that has a pedigree, but he's never done it in a regular season game. So I think people will feel a lot better at the end of this game. Just, you know, get the jitters out. You're in Dallas. It's a large stadium. It's a loud stadium because it's indoors. You get through this without any issues. Mm-hmm. Everyone's going to, you know, not that you're going to forget about Clark Harris because he has the awesome flow and the Fu Manchu, but you're going to feel a lot better about, you know, your whole kicking operation for the rest of the season, you know, once this game gets over with. So,
yeah, there's going to be a lot of eyes on that first field goal or extra point. And, you know, if that, it goes through cleanly, all sins are forgiven. And with a name like Adamitis, you got a fan in me. Any of the news for the week? It's hard to talk about news on a weekly episode because football is such a 24-hour cycle, but I think it bears mentioning the Jamar Chase double bird flip to Minka Fitzpatrick. One of my favorite moments of this early season so far. Especially because he backed it up with his performance on the field. I know that there's not a lot of love lost between the Cincinnati Bengals and the Pittsburgh Steelers, so way to further ingratiate yourself to the Cincinnati fan base, Jamar Chase.
Yeah, I was completely unaware that it happened until someone put it in the Slack channel. Sign up for Patreon there, boys and girls. There's a plug for you.
Love it.
Yeah, I mean, it's bold as day. He is giving the one finger salute with both hands to Minka Fitzpatrick, who all game long been instigating and trying to mess with the Bengals. He was kind of holding on to tackles a little bit longer, or, you know, just getting in everyone's face. My wife was even like, what's going on with number 39? What is his problem? He's a Steeler. That's what they're born and bred to do. So
you can't blame him because, you know, when you're raised that way, but, love to see Jamar get up there and, like I said, back it up on the field. 10 catches, 129 yards, and a touchdown. We'll talk a little more about Jamar Chase here in a little bit. Last thing before we get into what is going on next week, let's just do a quick wrap-up recap of what went down in week one. Obviously, it was a ridiculous game. Bengals losing overtime to the hated Pittsburgh Steelers, but there were some good things that I think we need to take away from this. We're going to do a little segment called Three Up, Three Down, where we highlight three players that outperformed their expectations and three that sort of did not. The first guy that I think deserves mentioning here is DJ Reader. I'll let you go into a little more detail, but he helped hold Najee Harris to 2.3 yards per catch. He was just dominant in the trenches. There's some great, great video of him taking on double teams by himself, still making tackles, just disrupting the run game in that way. I thought he looked better than expected in the pass rush. You know, everybody knows he's good against the run. I thought he really held his own against the pass too. What did you see from DJ Reader in this game?
just exactly what you had said. Yeah, Najee Harris, 10 carries, 23 yards. That 2.3 yards a carry is the exact average that he had last year in the two games. So holding to a trend. I mean, he struggles mm-hmm. against the Bengals. Even the backup, Warren, was 3 carries for 7 yards. Again, 2.3 yards a carry. I mean, he clogs the middle. He has incredible strength. He pushes, like, it takes the center and the guard to, you know, to try to contain him. And even then, he's still pushing the pile back and bouncing the play outside to have Hendrickson, Hubbard, you know, Logan Wilson to clean up. And yeah, he had 3 pressures. He got he did get back in the backfield because he is so big and strong that he can push the pocket back and again force quarterbacks to have to bounce it outside. So he was fantastic. Even rewatching the game on the replay and even the All 22, they did run into an absolute brick wall. So
yeah, he was great. He was impacting plays whether or not he was anywhere near the tackle or not. I was blown away with how athletic he was. Of course, these are professional athletes. They're all going to be athletic, but his ability to just sort of adjust on the fly while often, you know, going up against multiple guys on the other side of the line was just, it was impressive. And I am excited for a big, big season from DJ Reader. The next guy you wanted to highlight was Logan Wilson. What was standing out to you about Logan?
He just, as he's just as he's been kind of building up and up year after year, he was mm-hmm. graded really well against the run. Actually graded a little higher against the run than against the pass. He's an excellent, excellent defender against the pass coming out of the linebacker spot. Stats were kind of modest: 6 solo tackles, 3 unassisted tackles, 0 missed tackles at all. So I mean, he's going to wrap you up. He gets his arms on you, you're going down. Had 2 or 3. I forgot to write that down. I think he had 2 or 3 pressures as well. Came coming in off the blitz, just solid game all around. So reliable.
Yeah. Another guy who wasn't necessarily on my radar, but like you said, has been getting better all the time. And, you know, if we can keep making that sort of progress throughout the rest of this season, defense is going to look even scarier than it did in this game. Speaking of the defense, no surprise that our number 3 player up was Trey Hendrickson. Man, another guy who's gotten better every single year. Great against the run, solid in coverage. You know, I think he's going to emerge as a true, true star this year. He's already been loved in Cincy for a while, but it's about time the rest of the league takes notice. What do you think, or what did you think about his performance against the Bengals?
Well, for the Bengals, you mean instead of against the Bengals?
For the Bengals. Burrow played against the Bengals.
Yeah, that's exactly. I didn't see a lot of him in pass rush. He only had a couple pressures. But just him, there's the play when he chased Trubisky. He flushed him out of the pocket, chased him all the way down, almost knocked the ball. If it weren't for a split second, Trubisky mm-hmm. tucking it, he would have knocked the ball loose there. He's got a motor that just absolutely doesn't stop. They call him Blackout Trey because he just gets so focused, so in this, like, almost trance. Like, you don't talk to him. He hears the play call, and then you just let him do his own thing. And otherwise, there's a good chance he's going to rip your head off, so. Yeah, he absolutely held the edge down during the run. He had three defensive stops. So I mean, with them holding the run game to pretty much nothing, like, he was a big part of that, keeping the edge down. So
yeah, and it would have been super easy for us to wax poetic about Ja'Marr Chase in this spot. But as awesome as he was, and he was freaking awesome, and I'm sure we'll talk more about that. We expect him to be awesome. Yeah. You know, he's not going to be as good as he was in week 1 every game. But this defense was really the story for me. You eliminate points off of turnovers, or at least on drives, post-turnovers, and the Steelers didn't score a point in the first half. It should have been 14-0 going into the third quarter. Going to the fourth quarter, it was just a dominant performance, and they did it without any splashy plays. They weren't causing turnovers themselves. They weren't, getting tons of sacks. But a lot of that was by design. The Steelers weren't taking many crazy chances. They weren't given a chance for Jesse Bates and Dak Silva really be involved. I thought that I had high expectations for the defense going into this game, but they far exceeded them. I thought the defense was excellent. How about you?
Oh, definitely. I would have liked to have seen them have a splash play, have a turnover. They had 1 sack for 2 yards when it was just B.J. Hill chasing Trubisky out of bounds for, you know, that went down as a sack when he was just basically trying to skip the pocket, and I don't know why he didn't throw the ball away, took a loss, but there's a reason he's a backup quarterback. Everything was kept in front of him. But, they had, outside of a couple of big plays, the tight ends, which, you know, Bengals have historically struggled with tight ends. I mean, the wide receivers didn't get open downfield, running backs. Najee Harris got a lot of catches, as he does against the Bengals, but again, he wasn't breaking free. He was, they were 5 yards, 6 yards, 3 yards, catch the ball and immediately get tackled. So swarming, absolutely swarming.
Yeah, there's a lot of talented playmakers on that Steelers offense. Claypool had an impact, but it was on runs. He didn't do much in the passing game. They held Deontay Johnson in check outside of one freak catch. You can't ask for a lot more. You feel like you're blessed when Mitch Trubisky is on the other side of the defense. He's not, you know, striking too much fear in your heart. But fortunately, the defense is going to have another less than Hall of Fame caliber quarterback next week, and we hope they can repeat that performance. But before we get into the next week, it's not always sunshine and rainbows in football games. We do have to have a three down. Obviously, we have to talk about the man, the myth, Joe Burrow. He had a bad game. It was kind of ugly from the start. He gets all the credit in the world for battling back and really putting himself and the team in a position to win multiple times. I thought he was fantastic for stretches. He just started really slow, and there's a lot of things I think that you can chalk that up to, whether it be, you know, just a lack of reps. He had an appendectomy, which is, you know, a pretty big deal. It seems like that was about 35 minutes ago when he had that surgery. And then it was almost like he was just forcing things early, looking for that big play instead of just taking what the defense was giving him. At least that's what I saw. What is your takeaway after having a few days to sleep on it and watch some tape on Joe Burrow's performance?
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely agree with what you said. It's funny because everyone knew going into the season that teams are going to play a lot of cover two against them, keep the two deep safeties, try to keep the explosive plays. And he kind of went into the game saying, hell with it, I'm going to throw the ball wherever I want to, whenever I want to, because that's my game, that's what I do. Mm-hmm. What happened on the very first pass? He threw it into a spot he shouldn't have thrown it to, when there was T. Higgins was wide open running across the middle of the field about 5 yards in front of him with nobody around him for 5 yards. He would have picked up, easily would have picked up the first down. Well, it was second and 15. He could have easily would have picked up the first down, and who knows how much further he would have gone. He, you know, first half of the game, he was trying to be Joe Burrow hero instead of take the check downs, you keep checking it down, keep checking it down. The safeties are going to start creeping up a little bit to try to make a big play, and then you can beat them over the top. You're not going to be able to beat them over the top and then, you know, check down later in the game. You got to work your way up to that right now, because the teams just aren't going to allow that. I mean, that's what you expect the Cowboys are going to do. The Jets are going to do the same thing. Nobody's going to, you know, just no one's going to dare you to throw deep on them with the guys that they have. So it's kind of – he's a smart enough guy. He knows what he did, you know. He knows where he erred, and it's stay within the game plan. The game plan is they're still going to run routes deep to see if it's there, but check it down. Like, if it's not there, don't force it.
Yeah. I am not worried in the slightest about Joe Burrow. I am annoyed, I guess, that we do this lead up, and a couple of days before week one, he's in an interview saying, you know, he has to be a different Joe Burrow based on the quarter, based on the game situation. And then he comes out and tries to put the entire city of Cincinnati on his back from the first minute. And a lot of that's probably got to go on, that blame has to fall on Zach Taylor's shoulders a little bit. He came out with a really aggressive game script early for a team that's offensive line had never played a single snap together. I would have expected to see a much more conservative, at least for the first three or four series. And like you said, they're running that too high. It's going to be tough to get those big splash plays. So it seems like everything I've been seeing and hearing, that they are keenly aware of the mistakes in their game planning and approach in that regard. And I am not concerned we're going to have to deal with that in week two.
No. So yeah, and I don't even put a lot of that on Taylor, because they're going to run somebody, like they're going to have, no matter what play they're calling, they're going to have somebody, someone running the longer pattern if it's there. But he had guys underneath it. He just wasn't, he didn't check down. He forced it into coverage when he had Hurst. Hurst had five catches, three of them weren't until overtime. I mean, yeah, there were plenty of opportunities for him. For Boyd, well, he forced it into Boyd twice, but and before Higgins went out, and he had plays underneath for, you know, for Higgins to chase. He went for the bigger play. I mean, that's his game, is the intermediate, the 10, 15, 20-yard plays. You got to build up to it this year, unfortunately. They're not just going to give that to you. So,
yeah, and you have to imagine that the emotions had to play a big part in that. I mean,
yeah,
what had to be the biggest crowd in Bengals history. The atmosphere was electric from well before opening kickoff, and you know, he's a young fella that's going to play a part. So, hopefully, on the road in Dallas, you know, no pressure there. It's the smallest stage in the NFL, so no big deal.
Yeah.
Fortunately, he's going up against somebody named Cooper Rush, who I think that they just made up and pulled out of a Texas High School League game. So,
that sounds like pretty good about that. It's an auto-generated name in Madden.
Yeah, he's the guy on Dynasty mode that you create for yourself. next up on our three-down list, I don't want to go too deep into this because the guy was just put into a tough situation, but we have to at least touch on it. Cordell Volson, he had a rough game, but he was going against arguably the best in the NFL at his position in Cam Hayward. I don't know what you know, what all you want to say about that. I'm not worried yet. I didn't expect him to have a good game, and he didn't. What do you think?
Yeah, especially in the first half. I mean, the very first snap of his NFL career, he gets stuck having to block him for 2.7 seconds because mm-hmm. Burrow, well, you know, his first read wasn't there, so he tried to bounce it out, you know, and then Burrow ended up getting sacked on the play. I mean, that's hard way to break into the league, but no one's going to baby you on this level. You know, you're going to get thrown into the deep end, sink or swim. And he wasn't awful. It wasn't like seeing Isaiah Prince, Hakeem Adeniji, or Jackson Carmen out there. And I mean, he was the weakest spot on the line, but he was expected to be the weakest spot. He was a fourth round pick. He's not a first rounder or a second rounder. He, you know, mid round picks aren't supposed to start week one, and he has the ability to, and there's no reason to think that he's not going to be a quality starter, but he struggled but it wasn't unexpected. So.
Yeah. I don't think it's going to be quite as bad for him going forward now that they have all this tape to work off of. And you'll get it right. Young fella.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it is just, again, it's Dave Lapham, the Bengals color guy, played for the Bengals for forever. He offensive line is a fist. I mean, you've got five different players. It's strongest when all five guys are working together, and these guys have just started working together. So, I mean, you've got all these different parts that, you know, are, you know, thumbs introducing himself to the ring finger. Middle finger is, I'm not flipping the bird here. middle finger is introducing to the pinky. So, I mean, they're learning to work together. Not
me, Fitzpatrick. You can't do that to me.
I had headspace one elsewhere, but yeah, it's they'll get there. And it's funny because you actually look at the numbers, and I'll get into this more a little better. The pressure rate really wasn't that high. They didn't give up pressures as high of a rate that you actually, you know, that you would have expected given 7 sacks. So, but we'll touch on that later.
Yeah. Last person I think I want to mention here is Lyle Collins. He just didn't look good at all. Maybe he was shaking off the rust. He did seem to even out a little bit as the game went on. What did you see from Mr. Collins?
Exactly that. I mean, he looked like somebody who was still not quite in game shape, and he missed a big chunk of the preseason with the back injury. In the second half and in overtime, he looked a lot better. But for someone who was one of the best run-blocking tackles in the game for the last few years, he missed, you know, he missed some spots and left a lot of yards on the field. So, again, you expect it to get better another week more conditioned, working, you know, get five guys working together more. You expect it to get, you know, it will get better. So,
yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think that, you know, it was encouraging to see the way they came together in a lot of ways late in that game. It's week one. You gotta shake some things out. They were playing against a really well-coached team. Yeah. If nothing else, the team has spent a lot of time playing together. And they were better. Cincinnati was better just about all day long. So don't get too discouraged. As long as the season doesn't come down to one game in the standings, then you know they'll look back at this as a great learning experience. Obviously, there's no moral victories in the NFL, but there's a lot of positives to take away. Before we move on to week two, what else do you want to point out about that week one game?
It just reading all the national writers and a lot of the beat writers, they pretty much just seem to be writing this game off as a fluke. That just happens. You know, you can't really put anything on it. If you look at the power rankings, which are dumb and very subjective, most of them like knock the Bengals down like one spot or two spots. That's again, Steelers have a great defense, and Burrow, you know, handing out interceptions. So, absolutely, you know, no reason to think that it's anything, any part of a larger trend. A lot of people were talking about the line. You still need to work. You know, they need to fix the line. They did. Like, it's one game. Let's, you know, let's get a few more weeks before we can, you know, talk about a trend. But there's no reason to think, and no one's jumping off, you know, no one should be jumping off the bandwagon or anything, thinking that, you know, the ship's going down. So Burrow had five turnovers. Yeah, I think Burrow had five turnovers, and the team was still in a position to win twice. So
yeah, maybe more than that if you want to go back to every single play where they had a chance.
Yeah.
We should touch on it really quick. I know you and Chad did a little bit, but Zach Taylor made some really there's some head scratching decisions late in the game. He seems to have taken accountability for those, at least in the way that you expect a coach to in the modern NFL. I didn't dive into his pressers today, but kind of get the feeling that the team's ready to move on from those. I'm hoping that there's something to learn, and you know, they can improve on that going forward. I don't know if there's anything else you want to add.
Yeah, I mean, he's extremely, if you actually watch his press conferences, he's incredibly candid, and I think almost too much, because you can tell he's fallen on the sword when he's talking about, we need to do a better job of communicating. He talks a lot about the communication. We need to do a better job. A lot of that is, those guys goofed up. They didn't tell, you know, but I'm going to say we, I'm going to fall on the sword because I'm the head coach. I'm the tip of the spear. Snapping the ball on the punt with like 15 seconds on the play clock, when he was asked on Sunday, you could see the look in his face that he was, that is not what he wanted to have happen. But again, I mean, those are things that happen, you know.
It's week one.
Yeah, exactly. This isn't someone who doesn't know what they're doing. I think he's a much better coach Monday through Saturday than he is on Sundays, but not every coach is Vince Lombardi or, even Bill Belichick. You see how great he does without Tom Brady. I mean, so I'm giving him a pass. He just took the team to the Super Bowl, so
yeah, we won't be too hard on him yet.
Yeah.
So yeah, let's wrap up the week one talk. Week two coming up. We have a 4:25 p.m. game on Sunday against the Dallas Cowboys, allegedly America's team. As of recording, are 7.5-point favorites. Of course, Dallas starting quarterback Dak Prescott. Wish him health, but as a Bengals fan, not terribly upset about that. Dak's out for probably 4 to 6 weeks. Like we said, Cooper Rush, that made-up video game character, will get his second career start. Do you know anything about Cooper Rush?
He's fifth year pro. Had one start last year against the Vikings. Yeah, he's been around. He hasn't played much, but beat the Vikings on Halloween last year. He was 24-40, 325, two touchdowns a pick. Beat him game-winning drive last minute. So he one start. He acquitted himself quite well. But he's not Dak Prescott. He's not even Troy Aikman, who's the most overrated or the worst quarterback in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. But
Troy Aikman catching strays on this podcast. Let's go.
I can't let that one go when you have Kenny Anderson's about should have been in 20 years ago and someone Troy Aikman's in just because their team won. But I'll let that one go.
Terry Bradshaw is disagreeing with you.
Yeah, Joe Namath too.
Loudly in the back.
Yeah.
They have some other injuries. What do you know about their left tackle? Connor McGovern, ankle sprain. From what I've been seeing, this is kind of a huge win for Cincinnati. What do you know?
Yeah, I mean, their entire left side of the offensive line is going to be backups. Tyron Smith, who's fantastic, he's down there starting the rookie. And then, yeah, Connor McGovern's their left guard. He's got an ankle sprain. He's questionable. I didn't see participation if he was a full go, you know, limited or, you know, or what for today's practice. But if he's down, that's, again, that's a huge boon for the Bengals run defense. Someone else, another guy up the middle trying to block DJ Reader and BJ Hill. If you're putting a backup in, that's definitely good news for the D-line.
Yeah, I think that's the big takeaway is that we might get another big day from DJ Reader. The Bengals offensive line is going to be tested again. They go from Cam Hayward and TJ Watt to Micah Parsons and DeMarc Lawrence. All eyes have been on this offensive line since the end of the Super Bowl. What do you expect about the guys this week compared to last?
I mean, Parsons is – he's someone who's going to line up everywhere. He lined up outside as cornerback for a couple snaps last week. He'll drop back into the he'll drop back and place it, you know, and then play some snaps back by safety. He lines up on the line as a rush end, or he plays linebacker. I mean, you don't know where he's going to be coming from, but he's going to be coming. Probably the best rookie season from a defender last year. So definitely someone you got to make sure your tackles are on point. Jonah Williams, Lyle Collins need to be alert and aware of where he is. So definitely someone not to sleep on or take lightly.
Yeah, you said it. He is a beast. He's a monster. They're going to have their hands full. Yeah, you mentioned it earlier. Zach Taylor alluded to it in one of his interviews. Typically with a with these pass rushers, you kind of have an idea where they're going to be coming from. You don't with Micah Parsons. He could be anywhere. You know, that's what the game plan's for. That's what the coaching's for. So we'll see how they handle that. The last thing I want to talk about as far as this matchup goes and what they're going to be seeing from Dallas is who's going to be catching passes for the Cowboys. I mean,
Michael Irvin, Alvin Harper.
They might want to bring Michael Irvin out of retirement. See if Dez Bryant can come back and get a snap or two in. CeeDee Lamb obviously is going to be there, but he was bad last week and he had a really lackluster ending to last season. You know, Michael Gallup still recovering from his injury. I think that who's their backup running back that can catch some passes?
Pollard.
Yeah, Tony Pollard.
Yeah.
I think that the Bengals, sorry pronunciation, we'll be doing this all season, guys. They are primed for a big day.
Yeah, they're right now their outside receivers are Noah Brown, who has 44 catches, and this is his sixth season in the league. 2022 is his sixth season. And Dennis Houston, who was an undrafted rookie this season. So
Cooper Rush and Noah Brown, powerhouse.
People are going to remember that day when those, you know, being in the stands of that day when those two connected for three catches for 15 yards.
That's right. Well, let's talk about some keys to the game. What do you think is your number one key to a Cincinnati victory over Dallas?
Keep Joe Burrow upright. That's on the offensive line, and that's on Joe Burrow. Again, I alluded to it earlier. Bengals were 10th in pressure rate, meaning that only 9 teams faced pressure less frequent than the Bengals did last week. Sack rate was 27th, which means that when they were pressured, those a lot more frequently turned into sacks. That's again, part of that's on, you know, part of that is on the line giving up, you know, they had about 100 snaps, which is a lot more. So, you know, even 10th, you know, even sack rate being 10th, that's still a lot of pressure. Yeah. Burrow needs to get rid of the ball. He needs to quit. He needs to take the checkdowns. Like I said, look short, you know, if the first wasn't there, immediately move to, you know, to the undercover. You've got great receivers that are going to find a way to get open. You've got three fantastic wide receivers and a tight end who's more athletic than, you know, than 25 other tight ends in the league. Use them. So, yeah, because, I mean, their teams aren't going to stop playing cover two to keep Chase and Higgins from taking the top off. So that definitely is key number one.
Yeah, I could not agree more. And it sort of ties into my next key to the game, which is the offense needs to be patient. You touched on it a little bit right there. There are openings There are plays to be made. There's positive yards to be gained. You don't need to, you know, try to go 80 yards in one play on your first, you know, first set of downs for every possession. Take your time. Let the passing game open up the run game. There's been a lot of people talking about how Joe Mixon didn't have a very flashy game. But if you watched it, I don't think any of that was his fault. He didn't have a lot of room to work with. When he got room, he did something with it. So they need to I know Joe Burrow's not a huge play-action guy, but you just something to open up those lanes, get Mixon out into a little bit of space, I think, and let the game come to them. That's my number two key to the game. Just be patient.
Yeah.
Do you have anything else?
Yeah, and these two kind of go hand-in-hand with the run game and offensive creativity. Burrow lined up under center 18 times last week. 16 of those times was a handoff.
Mm-hmm.
That's telegraphing things right there. If they're under center and you see Drew Sample in the game, they're going to be running the ball. You can bring your corner, you can bring your safeties up, you know.
Pittsburgh was doing that too.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's again, it's we all know Burrow likes playing out of the gun, and he's a lot more efficient. That gives him an extra beat, you know, it gives him more time to give them a wider view of the defense to scan, but it would behoove them to pass more mm-hmm. when they are under center, just so it doesn't become absolutely, you know, you're telegraphing what you're going to do. I mean, the game plan was very vanilla versus Pittsburgh. They didn't try to run outside often. They didn't try any jet sweeps. I mean, there was a lot of motion. A lot of times you see Chase going in jet motion, but that was just a little bit of misdirection. And then, you know, but they need to be more and just more efficient. But again, that goes off of creativity, because especially in the run game, if you telegraph you're going to run the ball, it's going to be hard to be efficient unless everything is blocked up perfectly and, you know, your running back can find a cutback lane. Do think, you know, cause misdirection. Do you know that how many jet sweeps did Pittsburgh try? They did a double reverse toss back to Trubisky for a long pass down the sideline. So.
Yeah, and they have a terrible quarterback. Imagine how much more effective this would be with an elite quarterback. The Bengals have weapons all over the offensive side of the ball. Yeah. Use them, have them work in tandem to open each other up. And I think that we have a chance to have a really, really nice day on Sunday. So, speaking of which, let's make a prediction or two. How do you see this game going?
It's hard to see Dallas put points on the board. I think the Bengals have a better defense than they faced last week, and they put up a whole three spot. I'm saying Bengals 24-7. The offense is going to have a lot more efficient game. I don't think Burrow's going to go off for for 350 and three touchdowns, but they're going to be a lot more efficient, a lot less careless with the football, and the defense again. There's going to be nowhere for them to run the ball and nowhere to throw the ball because there's nobody to throw the ball to. I see Logan Wilson having a big game, 9 tackles, interception. We'll throw a sack in there too, 'cause I'm feeling generous. What do you think?
I'm aligned with you pretty similarly here. I think I've got the Bengals winning 28-13. I think that the offense is going to bust out in a real way. I think it's going to be a pretty balanced attack. I see Dallas getting a few points. I think they're going to lean heavy on Zeke Elliott, and that'll lead to a little bit of success in spurts, not for the entire game though, because the Bengals are going to be keen on it. But I just see, you know, last week I predicted a slow start and a strong finish. I think it's just going to be steady. I think they're going to play a much more just balanced, all around solid game, and the fourth quarter is going to be far less entertaining, but far more satisfying than last week.
Yeah, I'm happy to see him just sit on the football and let Mixon just run the clock down in the fourth quarter. So,
yeah. So that pretty much does our coverage for week two. Is there anything else you want to add about this game before we get on to our weekly pick'em?
I think we've got pretty much everything covered. So
that's about it. The only thing I kind of wanted to throw in there was I had a note just saying sometimes the best offense is a good defense. You know, we talked about how Pittsburgh might not have scored the entire game if it wasn't for those turnovers. Let the defense get the offense in good field position, and good things will happen. So moving on, Joe and I are doing, along with you know, some other people in our Patreon. That's patreon.com/riverfrontcincy. We get on there and we hang out. We talk shop to each other. We talk football. We talk baseball. We really just have a generally good time. You know, that's how Joe and I met, and he's never forgiven me. He actually deleted his Patreon subscription after he found out that I was going to be on this podcast with him, but we'll try to convince him to come back. Highly encourage you guys to come and join the community. We seriously turned into a family. We, you know, try to get together once a month and Zoom and watch a game and, you know, just get to know each other and have a good time. So patreon.com/riverfrontcincy. We appreciate you and all that good stuff. Last week, Joe beat me in our weekly pick, finishing 8-6-1. We are giving ourselves ties when there are ties, because who's going to pick a tie? That's the most boring thing you can do. We're not going to do that. I finished 7-7-1. So we're going to run through the slate real quick. Just throw out your pick, Joe, and if you have anything you want to add about the game, throw it out there. Ready to rock?
Makes sense. Let's roll.
All right. So week two, game one, I've got Chargers at Chiefs.
Who are you feeling first?
Oh, I'm going Kansas City in a big way on this one.
I got to go with the Chargers on that. Number one, I hate Patrick Mahomes. Great quarterback.
Ooh.
He might be a decent guy, but again, his brother and his now wife, they're just two of the most obnoxious people on the face of planet Earth. This actually should be a fantastic game. Thursday nighter on Amazon. I'm going to try my best to watch most all of it. There's going to be a lot of points, a lot of passing going on. I say that and it'll be a 7-3 game, but yeah, I've got the Chargers. I got Herbert coming up on top.
I mean, it wouldn't blow my mind. I think Herbert is a great quarterback, but I'm really high on the Chiefs this year. So that's about as fun of a Thursday night game as you can get. Next game up, Carolina Panthers at New York Giants. I hate both of these teams, but I picked the Giants to win this one.
I got Carolina, and there's literally no reason for us to say anything else about this game besides that.
Gross. I don't recommend watching it unless you are from Charlotte or New York. Next game, the Colts versus the Jaguars. The Jaguars who ended my Survivor pool in week one, which you and Chad felt the need to remind the world last or on Monday or Sunday night. Thanks a lot, guys. Who you got, Colts or Jags?
I got the Colts. They screwed me last week because they were my Survivor pick last week, and they tied. Thank you very much. Ooh. Ties count as losses. However, they're the better team.
You know what? We learned nothing. I picked the Jaguars.
You were the one person in the world doubling down on the Jaguars, and that counts everybody from Duval County.
How do you not get a boost from firing Urban Meyer? I just don't understand.
You're in Jacksonville. You're on a swamp. It's sweltering. It's gross. The people are gross. No offense to our zero people from Jacksonville, Florida.
If you are listening, you're gross. The Miami Dolphins at the Baltimore Ravens, the stupid Ravens. I think we picked the same team here. I've got the Ravens. How about you?
Sam, I think it's going to be actually a pretty good game. The Dolphins are improved on paper on the on offense, but I still think Ravens are a good team, so no reason to think they're going to lose at home.
Yeah, the Ravens are going to be decent. I think that Rashad Bateman might be a legit receiver, and they're saying J.K. Dobbins has a chance to play this week, so the jury's still out on Tua. I will start picking the Dolphins after I see a little more out of young Tua. Next up, another stupid game that nobody should watch. New England Patriots at Pittsburgh Steelers. Gross. Who do you got?
This is a pillow fight of two teams with awful, awful, awful offenses. this is kind of the reverse of last week's game, to where the Steelers should win this one, but I have them losing. I'm going with the Fighting Bill Belichicks.
Yeah, this is a high-profile matchup of two teams that are probably going to be really, really bad this season. I went with the Steelers just because it seems like the Steelers do have at least a handful of blue chippers on their roster. One less, TJ Watt likely being out. But that Patriots roster is just bad. I don't know. I can't pick them until they do at least something positive. They look pretty gross.
This year, I think, is very telling for Belichick's legacy. I mean, it's everyone has him as the greatest head coach since Lombardi, Paul Brown, but he didn't do anything in Cleveland when he was the head coach. Hasn't done a whole lot since Brady's been out, or since Brady's been in Tampa Bay. So prove that you're this guy. I mean, you have complete control. This is your roster. So I don't think they're going to be very good this year, all in all, but I'm still picking them.
Yeah. I think it's going to take more than another lackluster year before I sour too much on him overall, but I think it could, there's a real argument that the game might've sort of passed Belichick by. It might have outgrown him a little bit, but time will tell. They can go on a run and make the AFC Championship. It wouldn't blow anybody's mind.
When you don't have the greatest quarterback in NFL history, and I hate saying that because I cannot stand the man. Like, it's having that guy on your team cleans up a lot of mistakes. So
this is true.
Watch over a lot. So,
well, I am glad that Thursday night game is so good, because the next matchup also stinks. New York Jets at Cleveland Doo-Doo Butter Browns.
There's a lot of crap this week. I mean, just looking at the entire slate, there's four or five games that are just awful. This one definitely ranks up with them. I've got Cleveland just because they've got a fantastic running game. Brissett didn't screw up last week, and the Jets are still the J-E-T-S, Jets, Jets, Jets. Although, I got to give love to my boy Sauce Gardner from I hate when people say the University of Cincinnati. Again, he has yet to give up a touchdown college, and now one game in his pros. He has never given up a touchdown reception on a guy that he's covering. That will end.
Is that real?
That's real. 3 years as a starter, started as a true freshman, did not give up one touchdown reception ever at the University of Cincinnati.
New weekly segment on this show is the Sauce Watch.
He had one reception
for eight. The sauce.
One reception for 8 yards against him last week. I got to keep an eye on my Bearcats. So,
well, as the kids say, that's groovy.
Kids.
I also pick Cleveland just because Joe Flacco is the other team's quarterback.
Fair enough.
Moving on to, we'll see. This actually isn't too bad. Tampa Bay at New Orleans. I went New Orleans because I still don't think Tom Brady has a win in New Orleans with the Bucs, and that's literally the only reason.
I went with Tampa Bay just because Jameis Winston is good for a four or five turnover game himself. So I think the Buccaneers still have one of the best offensive lines. They've got a good defense.
That's true.
And I think they're the more well-rounded team.
I think that's entirely accurate, but I'm throwing Jameis some love. He did not steal those crab legs. He was given those crab legs. Full confidence in that. Next up, Commanders at the Detroit Lions. I would have this on the poo-poo platter slate, but Detroit might actually be fun to watch. That's who I picked. Did you not pick Detroit?
I did not. I went Commando. I mean, I went Commanders.
Oh, man. Listen, you heard it here first.
No reason outside of Detroit is Detroit. And, yeah, I think Detroit's going to be very entertaining this year. I think they're still a year away from being able to push for anything in the NFC North. But I think Washington's going to win that. I think they've got just a little more talented on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, if this game was in Washington, I might feel a little differently. But, maybe it'll inspire the Commanders to not have to play near Dan Snyder. I know it would me. Next up, the Atlanta Falcons at Los Angeles Rams. I think it's pretty clearly the Rams, even if they are having a little Super Bowl hangover. What do you think?
Yeah, definitely. No reason to overthink this one.
Yeah. I kind of feel similar about the next one, though it might deserve a little more conversation. The Seattle Seahawks at San Francisco 49ers. I went with San Francisco just kind of based on how I feel about them going into this season. They looked bad last week. Granted, they were playing in a literal swamp. So I don't know. I thought the Seahawks looked better than I expected. The 49ers was worse. I think the 49ers get back on track this week. What do you think?
Definite course correction. Yeah. That game was actually fun to watch. I only saw some of the highlights, but all of the rain, the water pouring everywhere in Chicago, you can't take anything. Like, there's nothing you can take away from that. I mean, it was just an absolute slop fest. Seattle won because Denver wants to pay a quarterback $250 million and then take the ball out of his hands to try to kick a 64-yard field goal. But yeah, San Francisco, they're at home. Levi Strauss Jean Stadium. Go Niners.
Go Niners. Next up, we had the Arizona Kyler Murrays versus the Las Vegas Raiders. I think Las Vegas is just simply a better team. And I don't think we need to spend too much time. Do you agree or disagree?
I definitely agree. I've got the Raiders. One note, though. Why am I spacing on his name? David Carr, Derek Carr's older brother. He was the first overall draft pick once upon a time. Mm-hmm. He is an analyst for NFL.com. He had Derek Carr listed as the most – it was like the third most talented quarterback, like the seventh most important player in NFL going into the season. And it's hard to read that without laughing, thinking that the only reason is that he wants his brother to pass some mashed potatoes at Thanksgiving dinner because Derek Carr is the third best quarterback in his division, not in the entire NFL. So,
hey, I think you just hit the nail on the head. He got laughs out of us, and he did not get an angry phone call from their mom. So, good job, David. Smart play. Yeah. We already covered the next one. We both have the Bengals over the Cowboys. Texans, hooday. Texans at Broncos. I think this one could be more fun than I would have guessed going into week two. But I went Broncos, more blue chippers. What do you think?
Broncos, let's ride. You watched that cringy thing of Russell Wilson doing Bronco Country, let's ride. Oh, if you haven't, you need to check it out. It's cringe. He's doing these takes for promos. He might be the most phony person I think that's ever put on an NFL uniform. However, I think Denver's going to roll him by four touchdowns. Houston's terrible. Yeah, I mean, they eked out a tie last week because they're playing a team that has lost nine or haven't won an opener in 10 years in the Colts. Denver's going to steamroll him.
Yeah, I can't think of a player whose Q rating started so high and has dropped so low. More so than Russell Wilson. He's very good.
He's just a dork. He's just annoying and just comes across so phony and disingenuous.
Listening to all of his teammates kind of come out, the former Seahawk teammates have not been reacting too kindly to his shtick. Him wearing headphones with eyes closed, just like spinning circles in the middle of the field before the game?
That's it's like I said, he was the D-bag for the C-bags. So, I mean, they weren't going anywhere this year with him, so I think they're a heck of a lot better, you know, flailing this year, getting a high draft pick, and just not having to deal with the headache. So,
yeah, I'm with you. Next up, we have the Chicago Bears at Green Bay Packers. I think, I hear the Packers winning. I know that they have almost no one. Aaron Rodgers has almost no one to throw the ball to. I think he'll figure that out because he's Aaron Rodgers, and the Bengals will win running away.
Packers.
Packers. You said also Bengals. I think the Bengals are going to win running away too.
I think that's cool. Packers own Chicago more than the Steelers own the Bengals. So, yeah, he could throw the ball to himself. He could, you know, they could put Sterling Sharp and Robert Brooks out there from the 90s, and they'd still be able to – Rodgers would still throw for 325 and four touchdowns against the Bears. So,
I mean, Rodgers might – take some ayahuasca before the game, and who knows who he's seeing out there.
Greg Jennings. Talk about flakes. He's he's in his own. He's in his own category, but
he is. Continue. So next up, Tennessee Titans at Buffalo Bills. Oh man, I think this is going to be a disaster for Tennessee, and Buffalo beats the tar out of them.
I think Buffalo's going to win. I think it's going to be one that's closer in on the scoreboard than it should be. I think Tennessee, they overachieve. I'm not going to say they overachieve, but last year was their last stand. They still have Ryan Tannehill, who's Andy Dalton on a good day. I really think that they're going to be kind of fading as the season goes on, and they might finish third place in that division. So definitely have Buffalo winning, but I say they'll win 24-10. So they'll take it easy.
Sure, I can see it. Last up, I think this is this could be a really fun one. Time will tell, obviously, but the Minnesota Vikings at Philadelphia Eagles. I have the Eagles pulling it out. It would not surprise me if either team won by a blowout. If it's a barn burner, I can see an entire gamut of outcomes here, but I think the home team is going to take it. What about you? What says you?
Yeah, this could be a heck of a game. It's last game on Monday night, and it's kind of not necessarily a pick 'em, but definitely could be a fun game. The only reason I'm picking the Eagles is because they're at home, but
yeah, same.
It'll be entertaining. So,
yeah. So there are a few watchable games. There's a lot of crap, but it goes week to week. We are going to be tracking our picks every week. If you guys want to play along, you can email your picks to team@riverfrontcincy.com. I'll forward those over to Joe. Joe will be keeping track of those. We will have some graphics ready later on next week, hopefully, to keep track of this, play against us. We're talking about trying to come up with a prize for the winner, just ways to get you listeners more involved. So, Joe, before we wrap this up, is there anything you want to part with? Any words of wisdom for the community?
One last thing. I've got a new segment that I am debuting today.
Ooh, let's go.
World debut. Random facts about a random player. I'm going to pick a random player off the Bengals roster, not someone that everyone knows about. I'm going to get three facts. Two are true. One is not.
Do I need to pick the one that's not?
You can, but I'm not. I'm not going to say anything. I mean, people can submit. We can be all kind of quiet and, sneaking subterfuge about it. But
first person to tweet at Riverfront Cincy, the correct answer gets a prize that I have yet to determine.
Well, you can comment on YouTube too if you want to. And you got timestamps. So first one, first reaction.
Love it.
So. Trey Flowers, cornerback. He is 6'3". They Bengals use him as the tight end kind of specialist because of his size. He's kind of built kind of like a safety. He came up really big down the stretch. His hometown is Converse, Texas. I'm not sure if that's where they manufacture the shoes or not, but he was born and raised. His brother is a concert flautist in the San Antonio Philharmonic. And the third is his uncle is Eric Flowers. He played 7 years in the NFL. So three random facts about a random Bengal player.
I'm getting my Twitter fingers ready.
You don't count. You got all the swag already.
I got the inside info. Awesome. That's fun. I love it, guys. Yeah, please tweet at us. Comment on YouTube. Do interact the way people interact. Joe, is there anything else you want to say before we get out of here?
Just expecting a little bit better results on the field. And Cowboys still suck.
Cowboys still suck. Guys, thank you so much for tuning in. Please go like us on – subscribe on YouTube. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts. We will be available where all Spotify, Apple, iTunes, I guess. I don't even know where else they are. But we're available there. And we will be branching off. You are getting this right now on the audio version, at least, on the Riverfront Red Show feed. We will be branching off soon onto our own, and we will – put out all the details on how to subscribe to that, and subscribing, rating, and reviewing, that is how we grow this thing, so we really appreciate it. And other than that, go Bengals, who day.
One Joe? Quick question, do you have to smash the like button? Can you lightly tap it? Do you have, like, you always hear smash like,
I think for the red show, one says
be gentle, I mean caress, just a nice gentle,
yeah, I think for the red show, you have to smash it because you're angry that
rage.
You listen to a red show. But for the Bengals show, you can just get a little love tap. Just get a little tap, tap, tap-a-roo.
No doubt to the fans out there.
Joe, this was super fun. For Joe Farsing, I am Nate Dodson, and a little love to the man, Sauce Gardner. Thank you, and we'll see you next time.
Peace.